Layer 512, the New Deal. To your left is the first panel under the large financial reforms plank overhead, entitled Saving the Banks. We have provided the machinery to restore our financial system. It is up to you to support and make it work. It is your problem, no less than it is mine. Together, we cannot fail. Franklin Roosevelt, Fireside Chat on Banking, March 12, 1933. On his first full day in office, FDR confronted his greatest challenge, the banking crisis that threatened to destroy America's economy. Roosevelt began with a decisive act. Declaring a bank holiday, he temporarily closed all the nation's banks. Then he called Congress into special session to pass emergency banking legislation. Treasury officials feverishly began work on the Emergency Banking Act. Rushed to Congress 4 days later, it was approved within hours. The act gave the government authority to examine bank finances, provide needed capital, and determine which banks were fit to reopen. The healthy banks were authorized to reopen on March 13th. But would people trust them? On March 12th, FDR went on nationwide radio to reassure Americans. His appeal worked. The following morning, when the banks reopened, depositors lined up to return their money. The banking crisis was over. Turn left and walk about 3 feet and turn right. A blue panel to your right speaks to how the innovative legislation of the first 100 days reflected the work of an energetic and creative group of advisors who FDR attracted to Washington. FDR's Brain Trust. The innovative legislation of the first 100 days reflected the work of an energetic and creative group of advisors who FDR attracted to Washington. During his presidential campaign, he had assembled a special group of academics and intellectuals to counsel him on policy. The press labeled the group the Brain Trust. It included Raymond Moley, a political science professor from Barnard College, Rexford Tugwell, a Columbia University expert on agriculture, and Adolph A. Burrell, Jr., a Columbia law professor. The other charter members were Basil O'Connor, FDR's law partner, and Samuel Rosenman, his legal counsel during his years as governor of New York. The creation of the Brain Trust was an important innovation that helped establish the practice of using academic advisors in presidential administrations. An orange panel, 90 degrees to the left, reads, Financial Reforms. There must be a strict supervision of all banking and credits and investments, so that there will be an end to speculation with other people's money. Franklin Roosevelt, Inaugural Address, March 4, 1933. During his first week as president, Roosevelt prevented the collapse of America's banking system. Capitalism was saved in 8 days, advisor Raymond Moley later recalled. But further financial reforms were needed to reduce risk and restore confidence. FDR acted quickly to protect bank depositors and curb risky banking practices. He pushed reforms through Congress to fight fraud in the securities markets. He provided relief for debt-ridden homeowners and farmers facing the loss of their homes and property. And he worked to stimulate inflation in an effort to prop up sagging prices and wages that were dragging the economy down. Turn left and walk about another 3 feet and turn right. The first of two blue panels tells us about abandoning the gold standard. During the Depression, prices fell to disastrous levels, a deflationary spiral that hindered economic recovery. Farmers especially needed higher prices to make a profit on their farm products. Before 1933, the dollar's value was tied to the price of gold, and U.S. currency could be converted into gold on demand. This monetary system was known as the gold standard. In April, FDR announced that America would follow the example of Great Britain and other nations and abandon the gold standard. This made it possible for FDR to increase the supply of dollars in circulation by printing more currency, the value of which now floated. He and his advisors hoped this would help end ruinous inflation and stimulate economic activity. FDR's actions had a positive effect, though not as great as he anticipated. A second blue panel to the right reads, Reforming the Banks. From 1929 to 1933, thousands of banks in towns and cities across the nation failed, and millions of Americans lost their life savings. The Glass-Steagall Banking Act stabilized the banks, reducing bank failures from over 4,000 in 1933 to 61 in 1934. To protect depositors, the Act created the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, FDIC, which still insures individual bank accounts. It granted the Federal Reserve System greater control over bank credit, and it ended risky stock speculation by commercial banks by separating commercial banking from investment banking. Congress dismantled this barrier in 1999. Turn now to your left and step about a foot forward to face a rectangular glass case detailing the path of the repeal of Prohibition. In the case are several artifacts from the period, including a ceramic beer pitcher and a set of mugs from 1934. The pitcher displays a jaunty FDR and the words, Happy Days Are Here Again, the title of his 1932 campaign song. Each mug in the set features a caricature of a prominent Democrat. The three mugs displayed here depict Roosevelt, former New York Governor Alfred Smith, and Democratic Party Chairman James Farley. Prohibition repeal was a major plank in the Democratic Party's 1932 platform. It was promoted in campaign buttons and paraphernalia. Included here is a car license plate featuring the images of FDR and his VP running mate, John Nance Garner, with a full glass beer stein between them. A text panel in the case reads, Beer returns. I think this would be a good time for beer. Franklin Roosevelt, March 12, 1933. One of the most popular bills enacted during the first 100 days had nothing to do with banking, farms, or public works. During the 1932 campaign, FDR had come out against Prohibition. The 18th Amendment, ratified 9 years earlier, banned the manufacture and sale of intoxicating liquors. Meant to end the curse of alcoholism, it had led instead to lawlessness and helped foster organized crime. A constitutional amendment to repeal it was working its way through the state legislatures. But Roosevelt saw a way to quench the voters' thirst more quickly. He signed into law the Beer Wine Revenue Act that legalized and taxed beverages containing no more than 3.2% alcohol, which the authors of the new law carefully defined as non-intoxicating. Millions of Americans celebrated the return of legal beer. Prohibition was officially repealed by the 21st Amendment in December 1933. Turning left, we come to two more panels describing how the Depression affected people's lives. Helping homeowners. The Depression put tremendous pressure on homeowners. By early 1933, nearly half of the $20 billion in home mortgages was in default. The defaults weakened lending institutions and undercut home values. Roosevelt responded to the mortgage crisis by creating the Homeowners Loan Corporation, HOLC. During the next 3 years, the HOLC made nearly 1 million loans. By 1936, it had financed 20% of the mortgaged urban homes in America. The corporation also issued cash advances to pay for property taxes and home repairs and redeem properties lost to foreclosure. The HOLC pioneered a large federal government role in home mortgages that continues to this day. Fighting fraud. The stock market crash of 1929 exposed the lack of regulation in America's financial markets. Investor fraud, risky credit deals, and other abuses were widespread. The Securities Act was designed to curb such abuses reduce risk, restore public confidence, and encourage investment. For the first time, the federal government became directly involved in policing the securities markets. The act required companies that issue stock to file detailed information about new securities with the Federal Trade Commission, FTC. Any false statements could lead to criminal prosecution and civil suits. The act broadened the investigating and prosecuting powers of the FTC. Since 1933, the federal government has taken a strong hand in protecting investors. Turn left and walk about 3 feet forward, and turn right to face an orange panel under another wooden plank that talks about jobs and relief. Our greatest primary task is to put people to work. Franklin Roosevelt, inaugural address, March 4, 1933. When FDR took office, one out of four workers was without a job. Another one in four could only find part-time work. Millions of Americans were barely surviving on dwindling aid provided by overwhelmed charities and state and local governments. Roosevelt moved immediately to put people back to work. He launched the largest public works program in American history. He directed billions of federal dollars to fund work relief for the unemployed. And he committed the government to an unprecedented effort to regulate prices and wages and improve business and labor conditions in the United States. FDR's goal was to provide immediate assistance to the unemployed and to increase their purchasing power. They could then buy more goods and services and help boost the nation's economy. Facing this panel, turn left and walk about 2 feet and turn right. Walk another 2 feet and turn right. A blue text panel in front of you talks about work for the unemployed. The Federal Emergency Relief Administration, FERA, quickly created government-funded jobs for millions of unemployed workers. FERA provided states and cities with billions of dollars to finance local work projects. From 1933 to 1935, it completed over 235,000 projects. At its peak, it employed almost 2.5 million people. The agency helped millions of families survive during the bleakest years of the Great Depression. The Public Works Administration, PWA, contracted with private construction companies to put additional people to work building highways, canals, dams, and other large-scale infrastructure. PWA accounted for one-third of all construction in America in 1933. From 1933 to 1939, it funded over 34,000 projects, including the Grand Coulee Dam, the Lincoln Tunnel, and the All-American Canal. Turn left, walk about 3 feet, and turn right. Another blue text panel tells us of jobs for youth. High youth unemployment troubled FDR. He personally devised the idea for the Civilian Conservation Corps, CCC, a program to put young men aged 17 to 24, many from urban areas, to work on conservation projects in healthy rural environments. Within 3 months, the Corps enlisted nearly 250,000 young men. They were assigned to CCC camps around the nation. African Americans participated, but they worked in segregated camps. During its 9-year existence, the CCC employed nearly 3 million men. Eleanor Roosevelt championed the CCC, and with her strong backing, a much smaller program was also created for unemployed young women. The CCC planted over 2 billion trees, fought forest fires, built trails, campgrounds, and reservoirs, and aided with soil conservation programs. It became one of the New Deal's most popular and successful programs. Its legacy remains today in facilities it constructed throughout America's national forests and parks. Turning left, we come to a series of panels under a wooden plank supporting the words "Rural Reforms." An orange introductory panel reads, If we can greatly increase the purchasing power of the tens of millions of our people who make a living from farming, we shall greatly increase the consumption of those goods which are turned out by industry. Franklin Roosevelt, Third Fireside Chat, July 24, 1933. FDR believed aiding America's farmers was crucial to ending the Great Depression. In 1933, more than one in five workers were farmers. They had been struggling through hard times since the 1920s, when crop prices dropped sharply. The Depression turned hard times in rural America into crisis times. Prices for agricultural products collapsed, causing farm income to plummet 60%. Desperate farmers defaulted on bank loans and lost their lands. Tenant farmers and sharecroppers were forced to accept harsh terms from landlords. Farm laborers' wages were cut. Roosevelt's farm program aimed to rescue indebted farmers and increase their income. Farmers could then buy products produced in the nation's cities, aiding economic recovery there. He also planned to improve rural life and productivity by bringing electricity and industry to underdeveloped areas. A blue panel to your left reads, Powering Rural America. Imagine a world without electricity. In 1933, 90% of America's farmers lived in such a world. Ignored by private power companies who could not make a profit wiring rural areas, farm families passed their nights in darkened homes. Their days were filled with time-consuming manual labor. Electricity could transform farm life with pumps to supply running water, refrigerators, washing machines, and other labor-saving devices. A longtime advocate of public power, FDR was determined to bring affordable electricity to rural Americans. The Tennessee Valley Authority, TVA, was a first step. It put thousands of people to work building dams and public power plants in the giant Tennessee River Valley. The TVA controlled flooding, improved agriculture, and developed industry in the valley. It sparked economic growth and improved living standards in a region touching seven states. Today, TVA is America's largest public power producer. To the immediate right is another blue panel, which reads, NRA, We Do Our Part. The centerpiece of FDR's economic revival plan was the National Industrial Recovery Administration, NRA. The NRA sought to end cutthroat competition that was reducing wages and prices to disastrous levels. It encouraged businesses in hundreds of industries to create codes of fair competition. The codes set maximum hours and minimum wages, guaranteed union rights, and prohibited child labor. Companies adopting the codes were exempt from antitrust laws. They proudly displayed NRA's Blue Eagle symbol on their products. NRA parades and rallies became community events. These activities gave Americans a psychological lift, but the NRA proved ineffective. Its codes were unwieldy and sometimes ludicrous, including regulations for industries like shoulder pads, dog food, and burlesque theaters. Many codes favored larger businesses and encouraged monopolistic practices that hindered economic recovery. Few mourned when the NRA was declared unconstitutional in 1935. Turning left once more, walk 2 feet forward, turn right, walk about 3 feet, and turn right again. To your right on a 45-degree angle are the final two rural reform panels. The first one on the left is entitled Saving Family Farms and reads, Falling prices for agricultural products sharply cut farm income during the Great Depression. Strapped for cash, many farmers couldn't pay their mortgages. By 1933, thousands had lost their farms and many more faced the threat of foreclosure. To meet this crisis, FDR included credit legislation in his farm program. The Emergency Farm Mortgage Act refinanced farm loans at lower interest rates and on easier terms. The Farm Credit Act established local credit institutions for farmers to improve their access to capital. These laws kept thousands of farmers from losing their lands and set a precedent that continues today. A second panel to the right tells us about raising farm income. The centerpiece of FDR's farm program was the Agricultural Adjustment Administration, AAA. The AAA sought to raise farmers' income by increasing crop prices. To do this, the government paid farmers to cut production by reducing livestock herds and leaving some fields unplanted. The AAA was controversial. Some objected to cutting agricultural production when many Americans lacked adequate food. The AAA also hurt poor farm laborers because landlords often evicted tenant farmers from unplanted land. The agency's success in raising farm prices greatly relieved rural suffering by getting badly needed cash into the hands of farmers. By the end of 1933, farm prices had nearly doubled. By 1934, over 3 million farmers were participating in the program. Please turn around 180 degrees and walk about 10 feet forward to continue your tour. You will now be automatically redirected back to wherever you left off in the base message.